Going Linux, episode 39, listener feedback. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom. Going Linux is designed to provide you with practical day-to-day advice on how to use Linux and Linux applications to get things done.
If you are new to Linux, moving to Linux, or just thinking about going Linux, then this podcast is for you.
Each and every month, we publish three episodes. We begin the month with a listener feedback episode, like this one. In our feedback episodes, we read listener email, play listener-generated audio, and answer listener questions. On the third Tuesday of each month, Larry appears live on the Computer America show. We post those shows, minus the commercials, as Going Linux episodes.
In our user experience episodes, we take generally 2 months to cover a topic. During the first month, we introduce the topic for new Linux users and recent converts. During month two, we discuss the same topic from a more advanced perspective for users of Linux building their confidence and competence with the operating system.
And as we said, in today's episode, we have listener feedback.
And as always, we hope that you find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done. As always, so much email and so little time.
Yeah, we got baskets of it. Let's see if we can get through it in a reasonable amount of time.
Sure.
First one is from Steve. Hey, Steve.
Hi, Steve.
Thoroughly enjoy your show, but get rather frustrated when you are railroaded during your periodic appearances on the Computer America show. Find below my semi-objective list of reasons why someone might give up the joys of Windows to become a Linux user. Feel free to read it out on your next visit, and don't allow them to interrupt you with those pesky commercial breaks. Yeah. Can't really help that. It's commercial.
Yeah, exactly.
Reason number one, you need a new operating system and can't afford to buy or resent buying a new Windows license.
Hmm.
Reason number two, you support the concept of software freedom, i.e. that all software source code should be readable by all so that enhancements may be made by anyone. Bugs fixed and security breaches spotted and rectified. Number three, why does this feel like Letterman? You resent the fact that Microsoft have a monopoly and control the way you use your computer. Number four, you have an old computer and wish to keep on using, or a new computer which you wish to run faster. Number five, you're frustrated with the effort and time it takes to protect your machine from viruses and malware. Number six, you're frustrated with the way your machine slows down over time and the difficulty in defragmenting your hard disk and fixing your registry.
Good point.
And that was one of the things I really loved about Linux. I don't have to reboot every few hours.
Yeah.
Okay, that was me saying that. Back to Steve. Number seven, you wish to have instant access to a huge repository of good quality free software that is accessed simply through the menu option, Add Remove Programs. And, you know, in Windows, this option effectively means remove programs.
Yeah, that's true. I never thought about that until I read his email.
Number eight, you need the confidence that your software can be automatically updated on a daily basis to provide enhancements, fix bugs, and remove security loopholes. Number nine, you need instant access to quality free support on the internet. Number 10, you wish to have a cleaner, more intuitive desktop environment. Number 11, you wish to be free to choose which tools you use to do which task. Number 12, you wish to delve into the depths of the operating system, should you wish to, but to be free to operate exclusively at the GUI level otherwise. Number 13, you wish to feel part of a community. Okay, those were 13 reasons to switch. Steve goes on to give us four reasons not to switch. Number one, you're dependent on a particular piece of software that will only run on Windows and for which there is no Linux alternative. Note that good compatible alternatives exist for most commonly used applications. Also note, Wine allows many Windows applications to run in the Linux environment, and virtualization allows Windows itself to run within a Linux framework. Number two, you play the latest high-performance games. There are some excellent Linux games around, but they tend not to compare so well with the latest Windows offerings in terms of visual effects. Number three, you are perfectly content with what Windows currently provides you. Number four, there's no one to provide Linux support, and you don't feel confident taking the step forward. In parentheses, web support is good, freely provided. Live CDs permit you simply to evaluate Linux without modifying anything within your machine. Having gained confidence it will work on your machine, it's easy to install, even alongside Windows, if that's what's required. Okay, and there are his reasons for and against. The ones against were a little weak, but that's okay, we understand. And Steve goes on to say, regards to Tom, love your sense of humor. Hey, thanks, man. best wishes, Steve in Red Hill, England. And speaking of my sense of humor, a magician is driving down the street, and all of a sudden he turns into a driveway. Ba-dum-bum.
We don't have, no. Had to think about that one for a second. Well, Steve, thanks very much for your excellent summation of why someone should and should not switch to Linux from Windows. They seem a little more objective than the ones I've seen posted on the internet, although I agree with Tom, the reasons not to switch from Windows to Linux are a little weaker than the other way around, but I also understand this is a Linux podcast. So I'm going to definitely keep that list on hand for my discussions with Craig and Carrie on the Computer America show. I'm sure they'll come in handy. Well, also, with regard to the commercials, since you are across the pond, perhaps a little information about the U.S. commercials on radios. Unfortunately, neither I nor the hosts of Computer America have any control over when they interrupt the flow of conversation. In fact, every talk show on every commercial radio station in the U.S. has similar predefined time slots for commercial interruption. It's how they pay their bills. That's why it's commercial radio. This is unlike the television and radio I've experienced when I've been visiting England and Scotland, where the advertisements are saved up until between the programs. Also, unlike the BBC, radio stations in the U.S. are independently owned and operated, or are part of large corporations and don't receive any significant funding, if any at all, from the federal government. So we must all live with the commercial interruptions. Fortunately for us, Craig and Carrie allow me to edit out the actual commercial content when I post the show as Going Linux podcast episodes. After all, the advertisers aren't paying Tom and I to advertise their products. Are they, Tom?
No, but we can negotiate that. And about Carrie.
Yeah.
Just an observation here. I think the place that he's coming from, he's in an environment where he's responsible for a lot of people running Windows machines.
Of course, yes.
And so when he considers a switch to Linux, he's thinking about switching over a whole shop.
Mm-hmm.
And what his boss would do to him if he even tried. It's a lot different for a home user to make the switch than it is to try to switch an entire organization.
Oh, absolutely.
So I understand.
Yep.
Then Steve wrote back, thanks enormously for your speedy and comprehensive response. I can now claim to understand the complexities of U.S. radio advertising. Tell me, how do you find the time to run a well-researched show like Going Linux, write detailed replies to every email, and fulfill the demands of your normal everyday life? Well, that's easy, Steve. We don't have a life.
That and the other secret is we don't provide well-researched responses to every email.
No, we do try.
Yeah, we do try, but sometimes just not possible. But the ones that we don't respond to on email, we try to get on the show. So
sure.
One way or
most
another, we cover them.
And Steve goes on another note, in a recent show, you were comparing podcast applications. Just to throw my recent and surprising experience into the pot, in the past, I've struggled to get Rhythmbox to serve my need with respect to managing podcasts and have relied on trusty Amarok. With the latest version of Rhythmbox, I can now easily receive, organize, and more importantly, transfer my two media players, a Creative Zen and a Samsung T10, something I couldn't do quite so well with Amarok. It just shows that things never stay still in Linux land, and it pays to be constantly on the lookout. Regards, Steve. Thanks, Steve.
Yeah, thanks. That was a very good couple of emails from Steve. Thanks. And we received a little bit of feedback from the command line episode from Ian. Ian wrote us saying, fantastic episode, just what I needed after using Ubuntu for approximately 12 months and wondering how do I really get into the command line. Thanks, Ian. You're welcome, Ian.
Yeah, you're welcome. We gave you a little bit of a taste of it. We'll give you a little bit more. We're not experts on it, but we can get you started.
Yeah, that's true. Next, John wrote us. Hi, Larry and Tom. Hi, John.
Hey, John.
Just wanted to let you know how glad I was to find your last podcast on command line entries. While trying to set up CCSM on my laptop, for those uninitiated, that is the CompIS settings manager.
I have no idea.
Yeah, it's the settings manager controls panel thingy for setting up CompIS, the fancy wobbly windows and flaming
Fusion.
Yeah, all that stuff. So he was trying to set that up on his laptop. He says, playing around in stuff I know nothing about. Sound familiar? I messed up my display totally. It was locked at 640 by 480. Totally unusable. He says, trying your ideas, I used DEXCONF, DexConf, and it worked. Now I have the normal 1280 by 768. That must be normal for his display. Still, I don't have CCSM working. My laptop, Compaq Presario AMD Turion, 64 ATI card, 200 megabytes. It should work, right? The instructions aren't very clear as to how to get CCSM working. I have the settings manager installed and can manipulate it thoroughly, but still, the cube doesn't appear, though that's the least of my needs. I'm happy to have a good working Ubuntu to use on the net and listen to my podcasts. Keep up the great work, guys. You do help. John in Dallas.
Thanks, John. Switch to GNOME.
Well, CompIS works in GNOME as well.
That's true.
Yeah. Well, just since you have the coal-fired machine, Tom, I assume you're not using CompIS.
I have none of the enhancements at all.
Yeah, I'm using CompIS on the KDE desktop, and I have the settings manager that John mentions here. And as I responded back to him in the email, the settings manager works just fine for everything except the cube for me as well. And I have a feeling it has to do with the HP and Compaq computers, although I'm not absolutely certain of that. But that's the only thing that I can think of. I've had it working on a ThinkPad, but I've never been able to get it working on my my HP. So that may be it, or I may be way off base on that. I'm not sure. All I know is I can't get the cube working on my HP.
Okay. And for those who don't know what CompIS is, it's whiz-bang eye candy. So that if you want people to look over your shoulder at your laptop to go, wow, what the heck are you running there? It's CompIS. It's just razzle-dazzle stuff. You don't need it.
Yeah, you don't need it, but it is eye candy. And the cube we're talking about here is you can have, let's say you have four or six desktops. You can put a desktop on each face of a three-dimensional cube, and you can spin it around so you can go from one desktop to another by spinning the cube.
Woo, woo.
Okay, more eye candy, not that useful, but gee whiz, try that with Windows. Anyway,
right.
No Windows bashing, Tom. Stop that.
Next up, Richard wrote to a number of podcasts. Hello, guys. Hello, Richard.
Hi, Richard.
I listen to all your shows, and I think they are packed with great information. I was wondering if you could help me out with something. I host a podcast for amateur radio operators, and I try to inject Linux into the podcast as often as possible. I know that you load different distros quite often, and was wondering if you could take a few seconds to look in the repository list and see if they have an amateur radio category. I don't have to know what programs are there, just which distros have an amateur radio category. I used SUS until they dropped amateur radio from their repositories. I moved over to Debian-based distros and currently use Ubuntu. I appreciate you guys taking the time to read this, and if you can help me out, I appreciate that too. If you don't have the time, I understand. Thanks for all your great podcasts, and keep up the good work. Thanks, Richard.
And coincidentally, we received an email from Roy on just this same topic. Roy writes, "Hi, Larry and Tom. A great show, guys. My question for you is regarding software for radio amateurs. There are a great number of hams using Linux," that's hams as in ham radio as opposed to hams as in pork sandwiches.
Or bad actors.
That too. And some of the bad actors are ham radio operators. Anyway, we're getting off the topic here. There are a number of hams using Linux, and there are quite a few specialist programs out there targeted towards radio hams. A radio ham friend of mine is looking for a packet radio program. I know there are a few out there, but are there any packet programs that work out of the box that don't require compiling? I've been running PC Linux OS since 0.93 Big Daddy on my main machine and have tried many along the way. Techstar and the developer team do a great job maintaining PC Linux OS. I also run pretty slick PC Linux OS 2008 GNOME, Mini Me, Tiny Me, Ubuntu 8.04, and Mint, all great distros. Cheers and beers, guys, or 73 to Roy if you are radio hams.
Thanks, Roy.
Yes, thanks to Roy and Richard.
Well, Roy and Richard, Larry did some digging and he did come up with some good links for you. That's a good thing because I have no experience with ham software. When I was a kid, I was WN9FLD, and I never aspired to advance past novice because I've always been shy of microphones.
What are you doing on a podcast, huh?
I have no idea. But if you'd give me a CW key, I was in my wheelhouse. All my gear was either Heathkit or Homebrew. Those were good times. I sold everything to raise money when I married my first wife. In retrospect, that was a terrible trade. I have a lot of respect for hams. You guys are the open source inventors and developers of modern wireless communication. For what it's worth, I did open the Ubuntu Package Manager and searched for amateur. There were several hits, but I can't say how useful they are. Sorry. Cheers, Tom.
Well, Roy and Richard, it's great to hear from both of you on this topic. It's also great to know that someone from the world of ham radio listens to our little podcast on the internet. I'm afraid that I know very little about ham radio myself. However, my Googling has yielded Terry Dawson's impressive list of Linux software for ham radio operators. I have an extensive list of links that I will include in the show notes, but Dawson's link is quite simple, so I'll just read it. It's radio.linux.org.au. To an outsider like me, the ham community seems to have adopted Linux in a big way. I'm sure you're already aware of some, or perhaps all, of the software that's contained in the links we'll have in the show notes. The key thing now is to identify applications that do not require compiling. Sites such as hams.sourceforge.net would seem to indicate that Debian and its derivatives, such as Ubuntu and Mint, would be ham-friendly. Also, Bruce Perrin's interest in ham radio on the Debian site would support this theory. Indeed, Ubuntu's packages list does have a lot of applications for ham radio that can be installed without having to do any compiling at all. I'll have a link to packages.ubuntu.com and the ham radio applications in the repository. This site represents a very good list of what's currently available for installation on Ubuntu computers using the package manager. That said, I also ran across a blog entry that OpenSUSE has some significant ham radio software available, but Richard's email would indicate that they've dropped that, and so that might not be all that useful in today's world. Incidentally, there is also a link in the show notes to a ham radio live CD project that looks like it's still under development, but it does look very interesting indeed. I hope I'm not sharing links with you that you already know about. Here's hoping that this stuff is useful. Thanks for listening.
And our next correspondent is Thomas, who has gone back to XP.
How can he do that?
I don't know. Let's find out. Thomas says, hello.
Hello, Thomas.
Hi, Thomas. Just a short rant, although I know you are not to blame, but I know you will listen. I love Ubuntu Linux and have been using it for several months now, off and on, with XP for my games. I've been required to switch from a wired Ethernet internet connection to a wireless one, and I have to say that I am most disappointed in Ubuntu's ability to work with wireless internet. Now, I know different hardware has different success rates, but this has really quelled my excitement for Ubuntu, and I certainly cannot recommend it to anyone who wants to use it on a wireless laptop, unless they're up for a challenge. Like I said, none of this has anything to do with what you are doing on the show, but I felt you would at least feel my pain with me. Running XP again, Tom. Wow, really sorry about that, Tom.
Yeah.
The best route to go if you're going to go wireless is first find out what's Linux friendly and then buy that equipment. Over on the Fresh Ubuntu podcast, they were recently doing listener feedback, and someone wrote in with a wireless adapter that works with Ubuntu and is available on Amazon for $12. I'm sorry, I can't pin down the exact episode, but if you go listen to the last couple, you'll find it.
Yeah, and another thing that might help you out, I know that Kubuntu, the K Network Manager, is somewhat notorious for dropping wireless connections. It depends on your hardware, of course, and how things are configured. But I know on some of the computers that I have configured Kubuntu on, K Network Manager hasn't been all that great. Haven't had too much problem with Ubuntu and the Network Manager that comes with it. But an alternative that you might try if you still have your Ubuntu machine configured is to download a program from the repositories called Wicked, W-I-C-D. It is a better wireless network manager is the way it's marketed. And it provides a lot more control over how you configure the network manager itself and the network. So, of course, you want to, unless you're connected to a wired connection when you're doing it, you want to download Wicked first, then uninstall the network manager that comes with Ubuntu, and then you can configure Wicked to start as Linux starts up and configure your network there. And that might work out well for you. I've used that on a computer that I was having network problems with, and it worked out beautifully. I also switched a computer where the network manager was working just fine, switched it to Wicked just because I liked the way it worked. And Wicked didn't work, and I had to go back to the regular network manager with Kubuntu.
Kidding.
So it's really a bit hit or miss. And just like anything else with Linux, sometimes you have to play around to find the right program, the right configuration for your particular configuration of hardware.
Okay.
Our next email is from John. John wrote, I first heard about Going Linux on the Computer America show, and I'm currently up to episode 28. On a side note, regarding the episode 24, the Mac and Windows bashing show, I have a half dozen or more computers with Windows 2000, XP, and Vista installed, and don't have the Windows problems mentioned. Don't worry, I've recently formatted three of them with XP for Linux dual and triple boot purposes. I know it's not perfect, and perhaps I'm the exception to the rule, but I sometimes think it's due to Windows being at the top of the heap. The reason I'm learning about Linux is because it's a more advanced, hands-on OS, and like you say, all users should try it. I also think, due to economics, Linux is going to knock out Windows in about 5 years. Instead of Microsoft holding all the cards, Linux spreads the knowledge to all. Thanks again for all of your Linux insight, John. Thanks, John.
Thanks, John. That's a little bit optimistic. I don't expect Linux to rule the world in 5 years. But we are creeping up slowly and accelerating all the time, so who knows?
Yeah, I think 5 years is pretty optimistic. It would be nice if Linux got some major market share in that time, though. And here's hoping. It'll keep us in business. Oh, wait a minute. We're not in business. Maybe we could start business.
Okay, next up, Charles wrote, "Hi, Tom and Larry."
Hey, Charles.
"After listening for months, I replaced Vista on a Dell laptop with Ubuntu. Look forward to a taste of wine, Charles."
Okay. Case in point. A little bit at a time.
Yeah. We are planning at least a segment of a show on wine, aren't we, Larry?
Yes, absolutely. I think what we'll do is we will talk about how to get it set up, some of the things you can do with wine, some of its limitations, and whether that gets into an advanced episode or not. We're not quite sure yet. We haven't done all the research on it, but we'll definitely have an intro episode that will give you that taste of wine you're looking for, Charles.
Okay.
Our next email is from Andy. Andy writes, "Hi, folks. I just wanted to say, love the show. I've been listening to the British show Lug Radio for some time. As the show has now finished, I had to find a new show to listen to. I think your show is great for the new Linux user, and I've learned some things myself. So keep up the great work. Andy from Berkshire, UK."
Thanks, Andy. I wrote back, "Hi, Andy. Thanks so much. It's always nice to get positive feedback. It's too bad about Lug Radio. Those guys were entertaining, if a bit difficult to understand when you happen to be wearing American ears. They will be missed. Thanks again, and stay tuned. Best, Tom."
Next up, Barbara wrote in saying, "Hello, Larry. I appreciate your help on July 16th, Tuesday's Computer America show. That was epic that it was fixed live on air with the right direction for a new Linux user. It made my day. Better still, your instruction gave me a better understanding of Synaptic that will relate to other tasks I want to perform. I have one other headache that I cannot solve myself regarding Audacity. In Windows, I was able to record streaming audio using this program. Ubuntu installs the beta version of Audacity 1.3.4, and now I no longer have the choice of recording through the sound card. I need that feature. I believe it's due to the new version of Audacity. When I go to the Audacity side, I have the option of installing 1.2.6, but I do not understand the directions or how to install it. Could you cover this topic for those of us wanting to record streaming audio that is not necessarily a radio station? In case you need further clarification, I have a Daily Motion video tutorial explaining what I want to do, and will include Barbara's link in the show notes. I am missing that drop-down box allowing me to choose either mic or stereo mix. Thank you for your time, Larry. Looking forward to your next appearance on Computer America. Barbara, a.k.a. Citizen X."
And by the way, that was an excellent catch you made on Computer America. She was in the forums and had a problem, and you solved it while you were out live and on the air. So very cool there.
Yeah, right at the beginning of the show, she was trying to get into the chat room, couldn't, and we got it fixed.
Yeah.
"I started my response to Barbara's email by mentioning that the dropdown is not there in the 1.3.4 version of Audacity because in that new version, the toolbar is hidden by default. I'm not exactly sure why they did that. I also wrote to her that you'll notice that importing audio and manually inputting ID3 tags are now in the file menu instead of the menu they used to be in. So there have been a few changes in the way Audacity is configured between the 1.2.6 version, which Barbara was using under Windows, and the 1.3.4 version. There are very easy ways to go back to the older version of Audacity in Linux, but since this new configuration would appear to be the direction that Audacity folks are going, I thought it would be best to figure out how to record streaming audio using the latest version of Audacity. I suggested changing some of the settings in the preferences, but none of those seemed to work for Barbara. So I know, Tom, you suggested to her some things that she could do to convert the files or something like that. What was it you suggested?
Well, back in the old days when I was running Windows, I also used Audacity to rip audio. But I found that in Linux, applications are really greedy about the audio. For instance, if you run Rhythmbox or Audacity or whatever, it seems to grab on to all of the audio resources and claim them for itself. So if I've got Rhythmbox open somewhere, even if it's not running, and I try to run MPlayer, I get an error that says audio not available. So I think this might be a Linux thing. So since I lost Audacity as a stream ripper, I have found alternatives, and I did suggest a couple, and they did work for her.
And in the final analysis, Barbara wrote back to us saying, "Hi guys, wouldn't you figure I ran across this article today," and we'll include a link to the article she refers to in our show notes. And she says, "Tom, this requires the FFmpeg thingy you were trying to use to help me with my request. I get it. She has a happy smiley face after that.
Okay.
She says, "I went through this tutorial step by step. It's a bit easier to save this way. Less steps. Thank you both for all of your help, Barbara."
Right. The way that I gave her did require several steps. And if she found a better way, that's cool.
Yeah. And that's it for our listener feedback episode for this month, Tom. In our next episode, Computer America. Until then, you can go to the articles and show notes at goinglinux.com for more information and detailed instructions with screenshots. Email us with your comments, questions, suggestions, and audio feedback.
And you can send us an audio comment by email, and our email address is goinglinux@gmail.com.
You can download the episodes from our website, or you can use the Flash Player to play them right there on the website.
You can also get future episodes delivered directly to your computer automatically as soon as a new episode is available. Instructions on how to do that are on the website
at goinglinux.com. Until next time, thanks for listening.
Talk to you later.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.